Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease.
I am so excited to be here today. I haven't recorded an episode in a few months. There have been some things with my family, all good, and my kids were off school, and so I took a little hiatus, and I'm back, and I feel so energized to be hosting today. I am talking to Greg Conway. He is a lovely man that I actually have met prior to preparing for today's episode. It's interesting with Greg. I feel like we have a lot in common, and we have nothing in common all at the same time. But I think the biggest thing is hosting this podcast gives me the opportunity to learn from others who are living with this umbrella of disease. And I get to learn their tricks in life and what gives them hope. And Greg, I've got to say, you've motivated me to think that I, quote, can. And, you know, to our whole Mito community, you are in for a treat today as you hear Greg's story. So welcome, Greg.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. I'm a little nervous about being here today. I could say my journey has been mostly filled with luck, a lot of fortune. I have to say that because I was diagnosed quickly. I met a lot of great doctors. I'm so glad that I don't even know the timeline of it, of how I bumped into Mito Action, but it's been wonderful. I've gotten invited to symposiums. Through that, I've joined other tests and trials. Well, first of all, I can't be in a trial. Any trial that I tried to be a part of, I couldn't qualify for whatever reasons. And I failed on the pre-entry things. I was telling Marcy the other times, I'm very fortunate that I'm fairly healthy. Most of my Mito disease, it manifests itself through my eyes.
Okay.
And it causes me vision disturbances. I have double vision. I have very profound ptosis in my right eye and mild ptosis in my left eye. And it's mostly, for me, a nuisance. I would have to say I'm still able to work full time, watch my grandchildren, do all my chores. I think I have crashes and all that other stuff, but I cannot time them. Maybe some of them are heat driven or I just get carried away and I'm done and I'm whatever. But I don't know, people at work, I'm known as the Energizer Bunny at work. So I have an energy disease, but I go figure, right? And I guess it gets into the whole thing where all of us have it. It presents itself differently to all of us, and I think I'm probably all over the place, but that has nothing to do with my mind. Why it's always like that?
Tell us your official diagnosis.
Sure, I am officially CPAO plus. I'm a plus. I don't have cardiac conduction defects or anything like that, but I do have just issues with my retinas. I have night blindness, so when the doctors diagnosed me, they did notice pigmentary retinopathy on my right retina. And now that was 22 years ago, so it's progressed.
So you've had your diagnosis for 22 years?
At least, yes.
Okay.
I think it was
okay.
2003. And I was very, very fortunate. I'm making it sound like it was all positive. It was devastating.
But you have this good attitude, and I think that everyone's going to hear that threaded throughout all of, what you say today.
Thank you for saying that, but I have to say, you caught me on a really good day. I'm feeling really good. It's a beautiful, sunshiny day, and I feel great, and there are times when I don't feel great and where I feel very down or whatever, but I mean, I don't want to sound like a ray of sunshine. And I do feel like that right now. I can hear it in my voice. I can hear it in Marcy's voice. But it's not always the case.
I know. And even, I had a fairly well, I should say maybe like a year and a half diagnostic journey myself. And to me, that still seems fairly short in comparison to a lot of others. And just because the diagnostic journey was short and just because, you know, you feel good in some ways that other people with mito don't, it still is a nuisance in your life. And I think what's important today is that we kind of hit on both, and that, you know, you may have a more mild case than a lot of other folks, but, you know, I think your attitude in life really does help with things. But when you first were diagnosed, did you have a super positive attitude, or was it harder at that point?
I was probably 34 years old, and I was devastated. Well, there's like a buildup to it, right? All of us, right?
Yeah.
So my friend at work, I'm like, listen, I was in the mirror and I was shaving and I noticed my eyes were looking into different directions. I never noticed that before. And one eye was probably a little, there was more toast. There was probably ptosis at the time, but I just thought that's how I always was, that maybe one eye was a little smaller than the other. And I didn't realize when I do the history of my childhood, my eyes were perfectly symmetrical, fully opened, whatever, but I didn't know any of that at the time. So I'm like, it was so gradual. So then I went to this doctor and I'm like, hey, you know, my eyes were pointing in two different directions when I'm shaving. I'm like, this seems strange. And this guy knew what to say to me. He's like, listen, you're right. I see that. But please don't worry. It's probably nothing. But in an abundance of precaution, I want you to see this neuro-ophthalmologist. And I went to see this neuro-ophthalmologist, and just upon seeing him, he reduced it down to four things. All four of them scared the bejesus out of me. It was like myotonic dystrophy. And I read, of course, it was the internet. I looked that up and I was like, oh my God, my life is over. Myasthenia gravis, which is an autoimmune disease. He did think maybe it was CPO, but at the time in 2003 or four, everything you read about CPO was that it was a very uniform presentation, uniform ptosis, uniform ophthalmoparalysis, where, you know, there was none of this double vision. But later on, I found that's not the case. I think I read yesterday 37% of people with CPO have ocular disturbances, meaning, you know, they have double vision or whatever. So anyway, this guy, and there was one other thing, tumors in the brain often cause eye problems or whatever. They did an MRI of the brain. They sent me to an EMG doctor who did the electromagnetic things where they run the electric pulses down your muscles. And he found indications that I had a mitochondrionopathy. He called it myopathic disturbances or whatever the terminology was. Anyway, boom, 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 muscle biopsy, red ragged fibers. I was diagnosed probably within half a year, pretty quickly. They told me to go to Columbia, and are we allowed to mention doctors' names or whatever? Or
I mean, sure. If you feel comfortable, yeah.
Sure. Everyone at the time was referencing Dr. DeMori, who's DeMorio, and I actually ended up meeting him not right away. But when I went to make the appointment, I met Dr. Hirano, who's been my doctor now for probably 24 years. Blah, blah, blah. We went there. I was told there's very little treatments, mentioned vitamin therapies. I might have tried them off and on. I was very healthy. Like, I could rollerblade. I wouldn't say I was this phenomenal athlete, but like, I could do everything. I could rollerblade. I could everything. So I just was like,
it was just the change in your eye positioning. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like, I remember like when I was doing this and you read about it, I'm like, oh my God, my eyes are going to close, or I won't be able to move them. I remember like obsessing about, I would look in the car mirror and I would look in the rear mirror and I'd look at my eyes and I would just start like getting so upset, like blah, blah, blah. And it was like years later, I'm like, I guess I had to go through that to get to where I am now, where I'm like, well, who cares what happens right now? We have today, Marcy and Greg, we have today. Try to enjoy today, try to be present. And I did not get to that point. It took me a while. And anyone who's out there who's newly diagnosed or whatever, I have been told that it does stabilize after a while. I don't know if it completely stabilizes or what, but I have to say, I did not deteriorate as much as I thought, or I, the catastrophizing that I was doing in my mind, whether I was doing it to protect myself, I really don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but it never happened. I guess I had to go through that to get to where I am now, where I just, I mean, I won't lie to you. I think about it every day, off and on, but it does not bother me. I try to push myself. I try to take really good care of myself. And I was telling Marcia the other day, some things that are wrong with me, I can't tell if it's just part of my normal aging or if it's the mito. And I just try not to think about it. I just like, Greg, just take care of yourself. Like, try to just take care of yourself. I barely drink. I try to eat right. I try to exercise as much as possible. I do try to rewire my brain with positive thinking. There's all these things on Instagram, these tricks on how you just talk to yourself and you somehow can rewire your brain. I do that consciously, and I've really been picking that up the last 2 years. I have no idea if it works or not, but it does not take, it's very minimal effort of like 20 minutes a day. Do I do it every day? No, but I do it.
Like, what do you do to rewire your brain?
Sure. I listened to this one Lavender. I forget what it is. It's driving me crazy. I'm sorry. I'm having a mind fart state. But I go on to positive intentions or reservations, and it's always the first hit on Google, and
okay.
I just listen to it.
Okay.
I'm walking to the train or blah, 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 and I just repeat to myself. I repeat myself. I don't have it in this room, but I use light lamps to imitate sunshine. I do any trick I can to feel good. I try to exercise every day. I try to, don't get me wrong, there's times when that does not work.
Yeah.
And I get very, very dark or anxious or whatever. So I have no idea if any of this stuff is true, but basically what I've been reading is that our brains are wired to be anxious, cautious, and fearful because it's like a survival instinct. But then when we're older, it really doesn't serve a purpose for us anymore, right? Because we know a lot. We know how to survive. We know how to eat. We surrounded ourselves with people who care about us and that we care about, and we're safe. But it's like that wiring is so powerful too. But I hope that's hope that makes sense.
I think it does. I mean, I need to work more on rewiring my brain. And I'm trying, and I read books, and I'm, you know, trying to be as positive with myself as I can. And it's really hard sometimes it's hard to get there. And, you know, as you said, some days it's easier than others. And my symptoms kind of go in waves of, you know, their strengths. And so some days I feel like I can a lot more than other days. But I think that we could all benefit from it, from this idea of, you know, pushing our brain to think a little differently and to kind of trust our body. And I think you've done a really good job of keeping that positivity top of mind. And I commend you for that. So when you're having like a darker day, do you feel like you spend more time rewiring your brain and, you know, really giving pause to your life and how to, like, what when you're having a day that isn't feeling like today, you know, because you said today is a good day, what happens on a day that it doesn't feel so good?
Usually it's too late. Sorry. Like, it's more like I got to do it as like a preventative measure. So I try to do this stuff pretty much like every day, but it's like, yeah. So like, if I go to work, and you can see this in other people when they've, I call it, you're off to the races. Like, once you're off to the races, it's almost too late to pull yourself back in, right? With whether you're off to the races with self-loathing or negativity or fear, it's almost maybe too late. So I try to, like, I don't know, as I feel it coming on, maybe go for a walk or do something. Or if I'm around somebody who I find negative or draining, I try to get away from them. But a lot of this stuff is easier for me because I'm older. I think I know myself a little bit better than when I was in my 20s and 30s and early 40s. And then have you say this, like, also, I don't have, like, Marcia, you have young children, right? Like, I can get breaks and I take them, right? So you have a lot of people in your life that really rely on you. I do too, but I can get away from them. My children are adults. They live down the block or another place. And when I watch their children, I can get away from it. I'm going home. So like I'm in a different part of my life. And it's funny you say this because I do tell the young parents at home, like, listen, and I tell them the message of hope, like, be kind to yourself. It is hard to have children, or say you're caring for a parent in your house or whatever. I don't have that. My wife is very supportive. We try to support each other. And I'm in a different boat foot than someone who is young.
So you're lucky. So let's talk about your marriage for a minute. So do you feel comfortable on the regular kind of sharing with your wife, you know, where your head's at with all of this? And when you're having darker days, does she know you're having darker days?
We don't talk directly about it. I think she could sense it. Or if I say one thing, she'll be like, give yourself a break. You did a lot yesterday. We're just like anyone else. We're a family. We have all kinds of problems all the time. Right? I mean, it's like there's no escaping that. So I think, I don't want to say it's a blessing, but I think sometimes worrying about our adult children or our grandchildren is a welcome distraction, right? Because when you're focusing on yourself, I know it's a habit, but it doesn't lead you to anything positive or good, right? It's like, but it's hard not to because we're only human, but I have. So it's funny, right? My wife is very supportive, but in a very subtle way. And she's got her own, she has like an autoimmune disease. And like with a lot of these things, there's no real treatments. It's just dealing with it and trying to move forward. And I think I get a lot of my positivity from her. She's very tenacious and doesn't give up. And we feed off each other fairly well. We're very fortunate.
Yeah, I love hearing that. Your daughters are adults now. How old were they when you were diagnosed? Were they kids at home at that point?
Yeah, all three of them were home.
Did you tell them right away?
No, I didn't tell them anything.
Yeah.
I was brought up old school. Like, you don't make your children worry or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? It's like,
yeah.
You shared something like that with me too.
Mm-hmm. Where, I haven't told my kids, no.
Yeah. I told you on a Sunday, we were going to therapy for my daughter with her eating disorder. And the therapist, I guess, was like, well, your daughter should know you're having a hard time. And I'm like, why? Like, no, I'm not having a hard time. I'm having a hard time because I'm completely stressed. I'm completely stressed out. I'm worried about her dying or whatever, right? So then I don't know what she felt like she had to tell my daughters. And I'm like, okay, it's out of the bag now. So then, and then I did bring my daughters up to Columbia University once when it was pretty cool. It was nice to include them in that. Like, mm-hmm. They sat in the audience. They were probably like 14 and 16 and whatever at the age. So, and they were mocking me, of course, after, which was what teenagers do to their parents. So, yeah. But anyway, funny you bring this up, because right before you called me, I had a call with my daughter, Gwen. And I'm like, Gwen, I never thought to ask this. What did you think? And she's like, I never really worried about you. She goes, but when you came out to visit me in Columbia, out in California, I was walking on the rocks and I was clearly struggling. That was an eye-opening moment for me that I realized I had lost all my depth perception.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I guess I haven't gone hiking in 4 years. So in that 4 year period of time, the double vision had become pronounced enough that my brain couldn't. And she's like, listen, I noticed that and I felt bad for you. She goes, but me and my two other sisters, we really don't think anything of it, you know? Like, another one of my daughters, Gretchen, was like, and Lauren have told me, like, that I can't even notice when you're wearing your eye patch.
Huh.
Yeah, so it's like, it's just, you know,
it's like inherent in them. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you perform, and like, just to give you a comparison, I'm going to go back to something you said. It's like, it's going to be a lot easier for me to be cool with this than a young mother. So like, you're worried about your children and you want to get them to the age where, blah, that burns off me. My kids are adults.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If like any shit goes wrong with them now, that's like, that's not because what I was neglectful, or I died early, or you know what I mean? I got into a car accident. it's like, you know, my hands are clean. Do I worry about them? Yes. But it's like, if something happens to me, I'm not overly, like, it's not going to affect them as much. They're going to miss me. That's it. They don't need me for money. They don't need me for guidance. They don't need, you know what I mean? It's just.
I think, like, they probably do, but.
But not at that level that you're dealing with, you and your husband. So, like, mm-hmm. I didn't want to interrupt you when you were saying that before, but I'm like, I'm just fortunate. That's all this is. Like, even this energy, I'm just fortunate to have it. My mother was like this. I don't know. I didn't do anything to deserve this.
It is interesting. I mean, you have a great attitude and you have seemingly appropriate amount of energy for someone your age, but yet you have an energy-related condition. It's unusual, you know? I am very happy for you. You know,
thank you very much. Yeah. But
it's not always sunshine every day. I know that.
Yeah.
You were very honest with me about another situation in your family. And I think it's important for us to really kind of hit on that there's people, you walk by people at the grocery store and, you know, as you said, to walk to the train, or, you know, you drive by someone and everybody has a set of circumstances, you know, and, you know, I worry about this in my life. And there's, you know, I have friends that have other health issues and everybody's worried, like what you said, we're wired to be like anxious and worrying. But it's so easy to think that, like, this is so unique. And it is. It's a rare disease and people don't know about it and people haven't heard of it and all that. But there's other things that people are also not super familiar with and they don't know how to, you know, talk to the person well about it. What I'm getting at is, you know, there's a variety of situations, medically speaking, that make you know, anyone feel like they're kind of on the outside. So it's not just our little community, unfortunately. But do you want to share with us a little bit about what you told me about your daughter and the management of it all?
Yes. Yeah, so right after I do the math, I would say 2 or 3 years after I was, or maybe, yeah, that I was diagnosed, my daughter just went straight into like an eating disorder. And it's like, because that's funny, because some of the questions are like, how did your family deal with it? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they're worried about their own survival. They're like, you know, and then like, I don't expect people to understand eating disorders, but it was a shocker to me. I did not understand how profound this illness was until my daughter had to go through it. And it's very, very similar to living with an addict. That's all I can tell you. And I don't want to get into more details. I've lived with addicts too. And it's like, it's all consuming. And I couldn't, when I learned about eating disorders and we took her to all the clinics and all the other things, I would never have known how profoundly ill these folks are. And very much like our CPO or mitochondria or whatever, it's a lifelong challenge for people. And, you know, but I mean, she's doing fairly well. But I think you and I were bridging into like if, thank you. You said it really well. Even though we're alone with our really strange disease, a DNA mutation that's not in our nuclear DNA, but in our mitochondria that no one knows about. And it manifests itself in your eyes that are high energy things and elsewhere mysteriously. And
mysteriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I have 5 older brothers and sisters, and I've sent them. I don't think they understand it at all or care to or whatever. I don't have that. I don't mind it. I just, you know, I remember someone like, why don't you get your eye fixed? And I'm like, I'm not getting my eye fixed until I really have to, because how do you explain that? Anything that we do with our eyes is not a cosmetic thing. It's like, you know, it's going to create another limitation or whatever. So it's like, I don't try to explain things. And it's so funny. There's another book about out there my sister gave me where, like, we're not supposed to care what anyone thinks, right? We're supposed to do what we think is right and just move forward with that. That's another thing I try to practice. But I'm never going to get there. I know I'm never going to get there. I'm too sensitive. I'm never going to get there, but I want to get a little closer to that. Like, we should not, you shouldn't care what anyone thinks about you, right? Like, you're a good person, you're taking care of your shit, and it's like, that's it. That should be enough for you. But you have to remind yourself of that.
I think you are really good at that, though. I mean, as we talk, you kind of just push forward, you know? And like, I feel like I live more scared, and I'm so scared of what's going to happen to me, you know? And I'm not saying you're not scared of what's going to happen to you, but you, I think, continue living your life more. And I'm really proud of you for that. But it is, I think, really interesting. You know, I definitely knew about eating disorders long before I knew what mitochondrial disease was, but they are both things that you just have to contend with, you know, and you have to deal with darker days and with some good days in between, and, you know, explaining to others when you feel comfortable, and oftentimes you don't feel comfortable, and kind of carrying it with you. You know, it's about, like, do you carry something with you that worries you and that could affect you medically speaking, you know? And it's not just us with mito disease. And I think that's, you know, it doesn't necessarily help us, but maybe shift our mindset, you know? Having a couple friends in my life, while I don't want them to have, you know, their autoimmune conditions and other health-related things, like, it has definitely shown me that we're not the only ones that have this heavy weight on our shoulders, you know, without a treatment.
You know, it's interesting. We're not alone, but we are all alone, right?
Right.
Because you and I are alone from each other because your CPO manifests itself differently than mine.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not alone.
It's a mind battle. Because it's like, sometimes I feel like I'm not alone, and then other times I do feel like I'm really alone, you know? I wake up to pee in the middle of the night last night, and I get back in bed and my back is killing me. And so then I'm up for hours, so scared that I am going to go into a flare up because my back pain is like the worst part of my condition right now. And it's like that when I'm laying there in bed, you feel so alone. So it's a battle in your mind of kind of believing some of what we're saying today, and then also recognizing that sometimes it's going to be harder to jump on board with that, you know? Do you feel like working out gives you a better attitude? Do you feel like it makes you feel like your best self? Do you feel a difference in your day when you work out versus when you don't?
Oh, most certainly.
Yeah.
So I know this sounds crazy. I live in a very busy area, but I refuse to give this up because I guess all of us give up things as we get older, right?
Yeah.
So I ride my bike to work once a week. And when I ride my bike to work in the morning, in the dark, with all the mirrors for people with CP. I'm like an expert with mirrors, by the way. So,
but like, that's so great that you do that, you know?
When I get to work, an hour later, I feel like I already accomplished something. And I also, it's not that I'm superior to somebody, but how many people pushing 60 are willing to do that? And it's like, I do it for my selfish, pure, 100% selfish reasons. I do it for me. And I know people think I'm crazy, but that like makes it even more exciting. So it's like, and so it's so funny because I work in downtown New York, New Jersey, and there's areas I'm passing through that are rough and all this other stuff. And I don't even, like, it just builds more and more confidence. And it sounds weird. Like, oh, guy pushing 60, working on his confidence.
Yeah.
I go, it just, by doing these weird things, it just makes you feel, I don't ride fast. I'm not
like,
trying to
prove
anything.
Like, how many miles is this?
It's 10 miles.
Wow. That's awesome. And do you feel a difference in your energy during the day if you do something like that? Like, do you feel like you have less energy or do you have more energy?
I'm going to answer this very, very technically. So I did a study down in shop, and they were measuring me, and they clearly showed that my tolerance is not what somebody who didn't have a mitochondrial myopathy or thing was. But to me, I don't see that. But the charts clearly showed it, right? So like I did the test. So my energy throughout the day is pretty good as long as I'm careful what I eat and I'm careful what I drink. So I try to eat like a diabetic. And when I do that, I have really better energy. But I didn't answer your question. I apologize. Sometimes I do that bike and I'm done for the day. But one thing that the bike or any kind of exercise helps me with is with my mental health.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do it mostly for that. And also I just don't want to give up. I will ride that bike as long as I can. I've been hit by cars 2 or 3 times and I still do it. And it's like, I am just not giving up.
I feel like I can listen to you because you have the same type of weight on your shoulders. I understand that it affects you differently, but to me, that's like, okay, well, maybe I could ride my bike, maybe not 10 miles, but I mean, maybe I can do something that I don't think I can do right now, you know, because I feel like I have this mindset of like, I can't do, but I need to have a mindset of maybe I could. I don't know.
Even if you can like do it a little bit and then I remember when I quit smoking, I quit smoking 3 or 4 times. And finally, the last time was it worked, obviously, until I had a cigarette again, which I haven't had in 20 years. But anyway, I would do crazy crap like I haven't had a cigarette in 1 minute. I haven't had a cigarette in 2 minutes. I would like, I set up all this like, oh, you're awesome. You haven't had a cigarette. And then I would do day 3 and 4. And then after you're through day 4, you're like, oh, this is good. And then I would keep the weeks or whatever. And then I would get drunk and go to a party and have a cigarette. And then I'd be it. And I'm like, okay, I can't drink. So next time I quit, I'm like, whatever. I remember I was doing this crazy thing at work where it was this really boring task. And I put a counter and one of my coworkers just started roaring. And they're like, you could have counted? I go, yeah. I go, this is torture. I have to create a trick in my brain to show that I'm making progress because this is like freaking torture.
Yeah.
I forgot what it was, some tedious, awful thing. I don't know. Idea. Anyway, I don't
mentally
know.
Rewarding yourself.
But a lot of this stuff is luck, right? Because you are born with your personality or whatever. So you can only operate in ranges in your personality. Mm-hmm. But it's like, push your, I remember asking Dr. Haran, I'm like, should I exercise hard or should I do this or take it easy? And he said it's very mysterious.
It's very mysterious,
So I just try something different.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm doing PT for my balance. My balance, I'll never be an Olympian, but it's a little bit better. And I can see that as I'm going to PT. So I don't know.
Well,
I'm sorry I'm all over the place.
I like your attitude. You're not all over the place. I think you're so interesting to listen to. So I know that you've been at your job for a long time and it seems like you're really proud of like your professional life. So have they made accommodations like, you know, with your eyesight? Has that affected your ability to get the job done? Or, you know, does everyone at work know what you're going through? Tell me about your life there a little bit.
There's a gentleman I've been working with for 37 years or 36 years. The first day I started, I met him. And it's very difficult to explain, but it's like, it's a government job. I've been there. I'll be 37 years in January. I've been at my job. I'm an accountant and auditor. And we go out and we visit the importers and we make sure that they're importing everything correctly into the commerce of the United States. I'm currently on furlough, but I'm working and I'm very glad to be working. So it's fine. We're not getting paid, but we will get paid eventually. But anyway, it's hard to explain because I've been there so long and this has been going on for 25 years. So like maybe when I first started wearing eye patch, people would razzle me or whatever. And I kind of laughed because it's like, it's almost like your brother or sister razzling you because I've been around these folks for so long.
Yeah.
It's not like somebody came out of this first day of school and someone's giving you gruff. It's more like a loving, teasing
type of
thing.
You've grown up there.
Yes, I grew up with these people.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's really hard to explain. So like even when I'll talk to you later about my family history and how my family handles it, it's very mysterious because it's been so gradual. So maybe like once in a while I started wearing my eye patch, then all the time I wear my eye patch. And I don't always wear my eye patch. I do have prisms, and I do put tape in my eye for when I'm going to drive my car or when I'm going to ride my bicycle. It's been so slow. But I've been so blessed and fortunate to be with this. I really enjoy my job. I'm still contributing. It has not affected my job performance at all. I don't have a physical job. It's accounting work for the most part. And sometimes I have trouble with the screens or whatever, but when I do the eye patch, I do have three different pairs of glasses. I have reading glasses, I have driving glasses, and I have computer glasses. But a lot of people my age have three pairs of glasses. And I do have prisms for the readers, and I do have prisms for the drivers, but I don't really need the prisms when I'm working because I'm almost always patch my right eye.
So share with us this famous shaving story.
All right. I told it in group.
I made sure to get your permission off record before.
No, it's funny because like when you're in group, like there's times where like someone's talking about something, whatever. I didn't want to just tell the people in the podcast, but you really can just listen in. It's like carefully listen in. If someone says something really interesting or sparks an idea in your brain, it's golden. Even if you only get one of those in the hour, it's like you're not going to get that with anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the shaving story is, so we were in group a month and a half ago and someone said something and I'm like, I go, oh, this is great. I can't wait to tell you this story. So when I found out, when I noticed what made me go get tested was I was shaving and I saw my eyes pointed in two different directions. And then when I got I was diagnosed, I'm like, oh my God, I have to start learning how to walk. I'm going to be blind. I started doing all this crazy stuff. Like I'm going to count the steps in the house. I'm going to prepare now so that when I'm blind and I'm going to learn how to shave without a mirror. So I started shaving in the shower with no mirror immediately. So I've been shaving in the shower with no mirror for 20 years. So I guess my face is changing. It was a little thing. So I'm shaving. And I cut my face. I rushed out the door, got dressed, got on the train, went to work. 40 minutes later, I'm in my cubicle. I'm working. I get in my cubicle. The coworker, Omar, goes to me. He goes, you got something on your face. I don't know what it is, whatever. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I went to the bathroom. There's a big stain of blood on my face down to like my neck. And then I'm like, oh my God, I've been on the train. Like, I've been on the train.
You've passed so many people.
I passed like 400 people in that time easily, right? And it's like, it was so funny. I just start crying, laughing in the bathroom. I'm like, just wiping it off. And it's like, there's all these weird stories too. Like, I do fall. I fall on the ground and people go up to, are you okay, sir? And it's like, you feel like you're a million years old. It's like the funniest thing. It's like, you should see how quick I get off the ground. It's like, and then the other time was like, you do get special treatment sometimes. Like the other day I was in Costco and they like, oh, come on, sir, come with us. And because I'm wearing the eye patch and they put me on the short line or whatever. Anyway, it's just like all these like silly little stories. So it started with shaving and it ended with shaving. So that was the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for being open with us about that. I feel like some people might not want to share something like that, but it is important to not take yourself so seriously, you know?
No, don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I need a dose of your medicine. I like how you live your life. I'm impressed with you. So, you know, before preparing for this podcast, we had seen each other in support calls. I can't go very often, but I do really see the value in them. Why do you like to go? I mean, there's probably people out there that do go to our support groups, and then there's probably also listeners that haven't ever gone before. So, you know, kind of talk about what it's like to be part of this support group through Mito Action and what it does for you and why someone might want to join in.
I'm on a group call every month. Mm-hmm. And the host is makes everyone feel super comfortable. There's a lot of freedom. The people in this group are very respectful of each other. I just love it. I don't know why. It just kind of slipped into it. I'm not looking for a cure. I'm not looking for anything in particular. But I'm like, yeah, let me see if someone's got a cool idea. And I can only tell you it's only been positive, because someone will have a trick for this. Someone else will have a trick for that. Somebody mentioned that they found a doctor on the Jersey Shore where they are going to make crutches for their eyes. Now I'm super fascinated. Maybe instead of putting eyelid tape in my eye, I'll do a crutch. I'll put a crutch on my bike riding thing. So, you know, there's all kinds of things. There's all these little tricks that make all of our lives easier. There's definitely a kinship in this group.
I like that word.
Yeah. One of the biggest pluses is your Mito Action group reminded me that there was a meeting out on Long Island. I'm in New Jersey, but I'm not far from Long Island, from Hofstra University. And it was a total fluke thing. And I met two or three people from our group. I listened to a fascinating about mitochondrial transplantation.
Yeah.
I met people that are looking to invest money. I met all these doctors. I listened. I saw one of the researchers at Columbia University that I've been in studies. It was freaking awesome. And I got to meet Stephanie. And it was, you know, I felt like I always knew Stephanie, but it was like kind of cool to see her in person. And
yeah,
you pick up even more warmth from the people when you're there. And it was just wonderful. And then I met the people from CHOP, Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. I'm only about 100 miles from there. I've driven down there because I'm at the doctors and I participated in some studies there. I'm going to start a second study. The CHOP hospital, the CHOP doctors have offering me different things than the Columbia doctors, both very valuable. And I'm like, I'm sitting here and I'm like, how freaking lucky am I? I'm an hour away from all my doctors in Manhattan, and I'm an hour and a half away from CHOP, and I could still drive. And I mean, I know you're in by the Cleveland Clinic. Mm-hmm. I would kill to be there too, but it's like, you know. So
a lot of people are not as geographically blessed, you know.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's part of the reason why I was diagnosed so quickly, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So.
Well, I think the world of the support groups that Mito Action focuses on and, you know, really prioritizes, you can tell within the organization that support groups are really paramount. So I know that there's a lot of people that are already involved, and it felt nice to talk to Greg because I had already seen him on some calls in the past. But, you know, I really encourage folks, even if you're having a good day or a darker day, you know, you can go and find this kinship. I like that word. It fits really well here, and be able to benefit and maybe even spark some, you know, positive thought in someone else. So, you know, there's a lot of groups offered from Mito Action. I know that Greg is regular in the CPO group, but there's a lot of other ones too. And, you know, even if that doesn't fit for, you know, a listener specifically.
And if anyone has questions about, like, Doctors of New York or whatever, please reach out to Marcy and she'll give you my contact information. Call me anytime you want. I'm an open book. I'm going to be more open with you one-on-one than I would be in a group, obviously. I mean, that's just common sense, right? So if you want to call me, please.
I like hearing that you're so giving to this community. It's really wonderful. You've been so raw and honest, and you know, you definitely have, it sounds like, a more mild case than a lot of others. And so we definitely want to mention that, you know, it's harder to have a positive day when the disease affects you in more ways than what you're experiencing, you know. But hopefully, you know, hearing from you and just hearing, you know, your attitude, and that it's not always a great day in your world either, but that you're really trying to push past it when it is a bit of a darker one. You know, it's tough. I guess with any condition, there's probably a big spectrum of how it affects you, you know, but it's kind of like what I think I said at the beginning is like, we have a lot in common and we have nothing in common, you know, all at the same time. But I think it's important to listen to each other. We need to feel heard, and support groups are a really good way to do that, you know, and also take advantage of it. Reach out to Greg. Heck, reach out to me. I'm here to listen. You know, there's so many elements of this there's so many points that I might be able to help with, or Greg might be able to help with, or, you know, someone else that I've interviewed on the podcast. But we are definitely a strong community, and hopefully the podcast continues to grow and reach more people, and there'll be people listening even down the road who can benefit from what you've been saying today, Greg. There's a lot of ways people struggle out there, you know, and it's not just us, but it's important to also feel seen with what we are dealing with.
That's beautifully said.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being so honest, and your open book mentality is very well appreciated here. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.